Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Harry Connick Jr. is back on the road with a new tour in support of a new album. And the tour stops at Tanglewood on Saturday night.
Not every man can build his dream house. Not every man has big words to say. Able men keep this world turning. For the rest of us making our way. Not every man can write a love song to sing to the one that he holds so true. There are things a man can try learning. There are things he should know how to do. Every man should know how to love her. Every man should know how to care. Every man should recognize what she's saying with her eyes and help with her burdens to bear.
Pianist, vocalist, composer, bandleader, and actor has received awards and recognition for his live and recorded musical performances and for his achievements on screens large and small, as well as the Broadway stage. Throughout his career, he has earned 3 Grammy Awards, 2 Emmy Awards, and 2 Tony nominations. His show at the Shed in Tanglewood is a performance in support of his new album, Every Man Should Know, a collection of original songs that touches on some of Harry's deepest feelings about life and love. And it's a pleasure to welcome Harry Connick Jr. to the Roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Great to be with you, man.
It is very nice to have you here. The album is lovely. It came out in June. It's been getting great reviews. And I assume when something like that, when it goes out and it hits, that is a pleasant experience.
You mean having the reviews come out?
Well, just to have it go, you've been working on it for a long time. It comes out, and it's being received positively by the people that you are performing it to and to others. That must be a pleasant feeling.
Yeah, you know, the most pleasant feeling for me is actually putting it out. You know, it must be what I imagine having a baby to be like. I mean, you work, you know, and deal with a long period of anticipation, and then it finally happens. And it's funny, man. It's like, this is going to sound crazy, but whether it's received positively or not never really affected me that much. I mean, I've had records that have, you know, sold well, haven't sold well, been reviewed favorably, not favorably. It never affected me, because I think the most important thing to me was getting the music out there. And I like that feeling, because it means I can move on to the next part of the process, which is performing the music. So in that sense, it's a really nice feeling.
Although when you read the liner notes to this album and to the CD, it talks about how personal it was to you, that you have never had as personal a connection and a feeling. And that struck me as something that is different, to have an artist say that, look, I've made this many albums, which is a large number for you, and this particular one has had the most meaning, the most personal connection.
Well, in some ways that's true, and the reasons are, I've always written tunes from the most romantic perspective you can have, which is non-personal. I would sit around and make up stories. I would fantasize. I would dream up scenarios, because I figured that was a lot more fertile ground from which to pull ideas. Because if I had to pull ideas from my own personal experience, it would be kind of limited. But over the years, I've gained experience and I've gathered a lot more things from which I can pull inspiration from personal life experiences. So this was a bit more personal because I was singing about things that actually happened to me and feelings that actually applied to me as opposed to some guy and some girl, you know, who fell in love in some distant land that I wrote about. A lot of these songs are actually about me.
One of the things that I've always found fascinating about your career is it seems that very early on when you hit big, there seemed to be a path destined for you, which was that you would be this big band singer and tackle the standards. And of course, this came out of the When Harry Met Sally soundtrack, and it had to be you and so forth. And you diverged from that so quickly, making your music original and making albums that were yours and your music and your sound. Was that always conscious from the beginning that was something that you wanted to do versus this other path, which many artists have taken, and quite frankly, is a very popular and profitable path?
Well, the only path I had was to become a better musician. I mean, the tunes that I played growing up were all traditional jazz tunes and American songbook songs. Being a piano player, that's just the repertoire you played. It wasn't about a style. It wasn't about trying to choose because at that time, there really weren't a whole lot of, I think Linda Ronstadt or Carly Simon maybe were the only two people that really were kind of dealing with those tunes on a really big level. I mean, you know, you listen to any jazz record before, you know, I don't know, 1980 or 70, all of those jazz musicians played those tunes. That was just the repertoire. And I was no different. Those are the songs that I grew up playing. The When Harry Met Sally thing happened, and it became very successful. And like you said, it was almost a path was made for me. And it was great. I got a chance to do the songs that I really love to do. But I never really stopped writing tunes. Here's the thing that really bugs me. The idea of regurgitating things that have already been done. There's a very, very clear distinction between imitating a style and like taking people's interpretations and passing them off as your own, and taking old songs and reinterpreting them. I think of myself as an actor doing a Shakespearean play. Like, I'm not going to take a famous performance and imitate it, but I will take the play because that's just great material. So that's what I always wanted to do. I always wanted to try to write my own arrangements, which I always did. I think that album, When Harry Met Sally, was one of the last albums that was arranged and orchestrated and conducted by somebody else. I think I might have done one or two after that. And every album since has been all me, because the last thing you want to do is redo a Frank Sinatra arrangement. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, that was a huge turnoff to me. I always wanted to do a new version, because these songs are just amazing pieces of music, so I wanted to reinterpret them.
In an album like the new album, Every Man Should Know, these are new songs. These are songs that you have created, but they're still very much part of your sound, and they fit so well with the other stuff that you do when you go out and you do a live show. It is all, while different and new, it fits into the old stuff as well. It's your sound.
Well, you know, I really appreciate that. I think, you know, no matter who you are or how talented or untalented you are, you know, if you keep at something long enough, you're going to, you know, individuality and originality is going to pop out. Yeah, I mean, these are songs that I've written, and I don't know, it's hard for me to tell. It's almost like somebody says, oh, your kid looks just like you, and you can't see it. I can't really tell if these songs sound like my tunes or not, but the one common thread that runs through my performances is that it's all extremely sincere, and it's always a struggle. It's always a constant artistic struggle to put on a perfect show, which I've never done. There's just too many variables that keep popping up during these shows, and I've never actually walked off the stage saying that was a flawless performance. But one thing that's there is the sincerity and the enthusiasm and the effort, you know. So maybe that's why the new songs fit in with the old, because it's the guy singing them is really dedicated to them.
And obviously maturity helps too, right? I mean, getting older and hopefully wiser, that we tend to look back at our lives and have a little more to say than we did when we were 25 years old.
I think so, and I think it's no coincidence that if you look in any discipline of art, you know, whether it's painting or writing or music, all of these artists, even though they have more to say, they tend to say it with less. You know, like painters paint less, and musicians play less notes, and singers, you know, sing things more simply. You know, so it's funny how they kind of go in opposite directions. Like, the wisdom sort of dictates minimalism in a sense. And I don't see myself at that point by any means, but I definitely can see how experience informs my playing and my singing in a way that it didn't when I was 25. I mean, when I was 25, I just wanted to play everything I knew and sing everything I could sing. Now I have the perspective of making choices, I think, better choices. And it's more interesting. You know, where I would play 1,000 notes before, I might be able to say the same thing in 10 notes. And the same thing with phrasing lyrics. And I did a radio interview the other day, and the guy was asking me about my dad. And my dad was a politician,
right?
But loves to sing. That's like a hobby of his. And he asked me, well, what kind of singer is he? I said, well, he's a great lyric singer. And he said, well, what is, he says, isn't that obvious? He goes, what else would you sing but lyrics? I said, no. Most singers don't really sing the lyrics. They sing words and stuff, but there's not a lot of great, there's few singers that really, really move you with a lyric. It's just not something that's done anymore. So it's those choices that make the performance really interesting. How do you say those words or sing those words to mean something to you and to the audience? That's what gets fun over time, I think.
Something you said a moment ago struck me about going out there and giving that perfect performance and getting off the stage and never feeling, you know, that it was absolutely the way that you wanted it. But obviously you've given it your all and the audience ends up being very pleased. Is it different when you're doing a Broadway show? Was it different in Pajama Game or on a clear day?
I've come off stage extremely happy. Like, wow, that took me someplace, you know, or if I'm playing a concert, like, okay, that was good. That was really good. And the other times I've walked off saying that sucked. Like, that was just, I just couldn't click. My hands didn't work. Whatever. And it's the same thing on Broadway. The difference on Broadway is that all the material's been written for you, and all of the work in that sense has been done. So you're left to interpret it, and that gets a little tricky because you can start trying to push boundaries. You can start trying to. It's like walking a tightrope, right? Like, you have to walk the same tightrope every night, and then you start wanting to maybe, you know, skip over the tightrope or maybe do a handstand over the, you try to get cute, and then you end up falling off the tightrope, or in the context of Broadway, coming out of character or making a caricature or throwing other people off. It's a completely different discipline, but it's the sentiment is the same in that. As a whole, when you walk off stage, I mean, sometimes I felt like I got, like on A Clear Day was a very emotional show, and I felt like I got kicked in the gut half the time because it was a hard show to do, and which was a good thing. You know, and other times you reach for things and they're not there. It's a fleeting kind of like a intangible electricity that you're always trying to find, you know, and it's a search. It's a struggle. It's a real struggle. So that's what I like about it. It's always different.
And you know, you did Pajama Game, and it was very successful on Broadway. And then on A Clear Day, it ran for a while. It didn't run very long. And does that make sense to you as to what clicks with an audience and what doesn't?
On A Clear Day, to be perfectly frank, was a total bomb. I didn't really read the reviews, but allegedly they were absolutely horrible. I read one. It was awful, and the crowds, you know, were diminishing as the shows went on. But what was really funny is that it's hard to. Pajama Game is a no-brainer. I mean, anybody from anywhere can come and see that show, and if it's a good performance, it's a formula that works. It's got great songs. It's got an easy plot. I mean, on A Clear Day, I played a psychiatrist that was teetering on a psychotic breakdown, who was having an affair with a woman that didn't exist, and his patient was this young gay man who came to me to be hypnotized to quit smoking, and whenever I hypnotized him, he became this woman. So I was in love with her. She didn't exist, and this young gay guy was in love with me, and I don't think audiences necessarily wanted to see that. I absolutely loved it, and it was one of the greatest experiences of my life, but I don't know. I don't know why people didn't dig it. It was an amazing experience for me, but you know, but I guess that goes back to the very first thing you said. Like, it must feel good when things come out and get reviewed favorably. Or it doesn't matter, really. What matters is the process. It's all about the journey, I think.
And I saw both shows. I saw a Pajama Game. I saw On a Clear Day. And the thing that struck me about A Clear Day was that the music was so lovely. It was beautiful. The story is a bit more complex than I had remembered it being, I think, than it was originally, certainly. Even though it was a wonderful experience, I assume then that it wouldn't have any impact on you doing further theater work of going to another show.
Well, that's what people, like, even producers in the show, every time I see them, like, I'll see them at an event, and they come up to me with this look on their face, like, oh, no, this isn't going to scare you away from Broadway, is it? And I'm like, I'm a performer, man. Like, if no one came to see that show, if it closed on opening night, that has no effect on me.
Yeah.
I remember people moping around after the reviews came out, and I don't understand that. I just don't understand that. Like, who are we doing this for? Like, this is for us. This is I don't get it. So, no, it has no impact at all. I absolutely love Broadway. I love the people involved in it. People could throw tomatoes at me. I've been doing this for 40 years. I love performing. And it's actually funny to me when people write bad reviews. It's almost funnier when they write good reviews, because nobody really knows what you're doing. They don't know. 99.9% of the people don't know that I'm the guy who writes the arrangements and orchestrations on my show.
Right.
They don't know that my gesticulations when I'm singing a tune that's rubato are actually conducting the orchestra. They don't know that. They don't know that. And they're not supposed to. What they're supposed to do is come see me perform, and either they like it or they don't. They don't need to know that I spent 8 hours that day writing a chart that we just performed for the first time. They just want it when I sing that song, it has to kill. That's all they care about. So nobody really knows, and I'm totally cool with that. My wife is not cool with that. She wants me to go out and tell everybody, why don't you let them know what you do? And I'm like, you know, maybe at some point. Like, I just told you what I did, so maybe I'm getting to the point where I'd like people to know. You know, I love it, man. Nothing else. You know, this is too much in my bones to scare me away.
Well, and just bringing this full circle, because now I'm curious, but because we had our conversation about of you having a path that was taking traditional music and sort of making that your path or doing your own thing. So when it comes to theater, would you like to do a show that you originate, where you're not doing a standard show, that you're doing something that was written for you?
Definitely. I'm actually writing 3 shows right now. I love the idea of doing new music. I can't really talk about them because they're kind of in the embryonic developmental stages, but literally 3 different shows that are all, you know, equally exciting. So the idea of doing something, I guess a kind of a goal, a fantasy I have, is to be in a show, to star in a show, and to write all of the words and music and do all the orchestrations. That would be something that I would like to do. And it's in the process of being done. So it's fun. It's fun to do that. It's a fulfilling life.
Well, you're going to be at Tanglewood on Saturday night. It's August 31st at 7 o'clock, and it'll be great to have you in Tanglewood. It'll be great to have you back in the region. It's the Everyman Should Know Tour. Harry Connick Jr., what a pleasure. A delight speaking to you.
Hey, man, it's great talking to you, too, and you know, I hope you guys get a chance to come out. We're very excited to play there.
Thank you. Harry Connick Jr.'s new album is Everyman Should Know. He'll be at Tanglewood Saturday night at 7 o'clock. You can find out more by going to tanglewood.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Every man should know how to love her. Every man should know how to care. Every man should recognize what she sends with her eyes and help with her breath.